in a dark small room, and you turn the lights on, and you see what scours away. We are Frontier Republicans. We're not hiding on a website somewhere. We can't find out who we are. All of us in the room here are speaking on behalf of the Frontier Republicans. So with that, Dale, thank you very much for the hard work and effort. Doug, appreciate you. Doug is that someone else. He actually took those steps and put this together up until I did.
A lot of name calling that I just think is prevalent nationwide in politics and is very distasteful to me.
Turn the lights on and you see what scours away.
Was it just me, or are they calling us all cockroaches? No, that couldn't be. They're all about civility. Here we go. Such classics. Whatever would we do without the red-coated Frontier Republicans? They've been kind of quiet for a while. Well, except for Gail Simmons. That lady never stops talking. But from the rest of them, we really haven't heard that much. And then when I wondered if they were all just going to go away, Doug Camblin pops back up in the news. Well, good morning, my friends, and welcome to another installment of Morning Reload. From high above all other pedantic and puerile forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. We began the program with some vintage Frontier Republican speak, the Redcoats. Doug Camblin and Frontier Joe McGinley, along with Sheridan's Gail Simmons, held a meeting down in Cheyenne in 2020 to tell the world that the Frontier Republicans exist. All of us knew that before. They're the liberals that can't get elected running as a Democrat, so they hide in the Republican Party, claim to be a Republican, yet still act like Democrats. For a long time, these frontier types were in control of the Wyoming Republican Party. That is, of course, until the conservatives rightfully took over. But they still claim to be Republicans, even though most of them don't agree with the party platform and they don't want to play ball with the Republican Party. They're the Redcoats. And they don't like that the conservatives are now in charge of the state. But one of them popped up in the news yesterday. So cue the red-coated Frontier Republican spooky music. From the Cowpie, in an article entitled Letter to the Editor, Current GOP is being led down a path of destruction. Frontier Republican founder Doug Camblin writes, and I quote, "The actions of the Central Committee at the state convention proves that the majority does not care about the U.S. or state constitution or party bylaws and platform. They are operating as a totalitarian republic, which the end result will be death to the Wyoming GOP and ultimately Wyoming as we know it." So apparently, holding the Frontier Republican types in Laramie County accountable for their actions is going to lead to the destruction of the entire state of Wyoming. The problem, Doug, is that the vast majority of Republicans in Wyoming do not agree with you. 80% of the Republicans at the convention voted not to seat Laramie County. That means you Frontier types are in the extreme minority in the party. And by the way, your use of the word totalitarian is interesting, considering that you said this.
A lot of name calling that I just think is prevalent nationwide in politics and is very distasteful to me.
Yeah, I thought you guys were all about civility. As it turns out, you never meant that from the very beginning, because in that very same meeting, you referred to us as extremists and cockroaches. Oh, I know, you didn't say it, but your good buddy Frontier Joe McGinley did. Here it is again.
In a dark small room, you turn the lights on and you see what scours away.
And he followed it up with this.
We are Frontier Republicans. We're not hiding on a website somewhere. We can't find out who we are. All of us in the room here are speaking on behalf of the Frontier Republicans.
In the video, I didn't see you objecting to Joe McGinley referring to conservatives as cockroaches. Quite the reverse, actually. In the end, you applauded everything that he had to say. You stood right there in front of the camera and clapped your hands, saying that, oh, yeah, you guys, you frontier Republicans, you're all about civility, and there's extremists that have taken over the party. Yeah, because Wyoming's conservative, and you're not. Well, anyhow, my friends, I led with the red-coated frontier Republicans this morning because pretty soon Cowboy State Politics will surpass 75,000 downloads. And it all began with an interview with one of the founders of the Frontier Republicans, Gail Simmons. So it seems appropriate that when we hit that milestone, we go back to where it all began and talk about these folks that really are trying to tear the Republican Party apart in the state of Wyoming from the inside. And so we're going to be doing that all week. In fact, on Tuesday, tomorrow, we're going to have an interview with someone who is at the Laramie County Republican Party Convention, and she's going to confirm exactly what they didn't do and how they violated their bylaws. But that's tomorrow. This morning, we're going to wrap up our gubernatorial forum and play the last interview, the one from Brent Behan. It's a fantastic discussion, and I know that you're going to enjoy it. But first, some totally egregious self-aggrandizement. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There, you can find all of the shows as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Sleepy Joe Biden or you're one of these dumb frontier Republicans and you have no idea what's going on, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and educate yourself. So here we go. The last interview in our gubernatorial forum, a discussion with Brent Behan. So now we have four people running for the office of governor of Wyoming. We have Brent Behan, Mark Gordon. Oops, we better start this one again. So who are the people running for governor? There's you, Mark.
Quick. And Rammel.
Rammel. Rex Rammel. Okay, yeah. See, I've already forgotten Rex Rammel. Let me try that again. So now we have four people running for the office of governor of Wyoming. There's the incumbent, Mark Gordon, Brent Behan from Sheridan, Rex Rammel, which we don't really know where he's from, and we have James Quick from over in Douglas. And joining me today is Brent Behan. Welcome to Cowboy State Politics, Brent.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
The way I start every interview is I just ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Brent Behan?
Okay. Well, again, I appreciate the time, Dave. I am Brent Behan. I am a native of the great state of Wyoming. Born to a Marine Corps officer. I didn't spend a whole lot of time here when I was younger. I did come back, went through the UW, the engineering college there at UW, and then I was also commissioned as a Marine Corps officer shortly thereafter, and then went off and was a Marine for 28 and a half years, although I did keep my maintain my residency all those years. So I voted in this state. I've been a registered Republican in this state because that's actually come up a few times that I was once a Democrat, which I never was. Then came back, retired out of the Marine Corps at the end of 2019, relocated to Sheridan. And then I was working for Bighorn Airways up there in Sheridan as the director of safety and standardization. Resigned this fall specifically to do this because I saw a very compelling argument to do it based on where our nation is going and where it has been going.
Well, that's actually my first question. Yeah. Is why in the devil do you want to be the governor of Wyoming? I mean, tell us why you made the decision to run against Mark Gordon.
It's primarily two things. One is to protect my personal freedom, and by default, the freedoms of everybody in the state of Wyoming, and obviously very, very important. And two, to have the authority to say no to federal overreach and make it count. There were three triggers, though, through my life that really kind of led me to this point. I was going through flight school down at Pensacola, Florida, back in 92, 93, when Bill Clinton got elected. Shortly after his inauguration, I was sitting there fishing one day, and I thought, you know, one of these days I'm going to be the governor of Wyoming because I'm not going to put up with this stuff that was coming. And although those policies pale in comparison to today, it's laid the groundwork for today. The second trigger was actually more recent, and that was when Mark Gordon shut this state down. I thought...
You know, he claims he didn't do that,
by the way. Oh, I know he claims he didn't do it. Well, and he's shucking the responsibility because he, you know, he empowered an appointed official, an unelected official, to basically run this state, and which is something I would never do. That's completely the responsibility of the governor. And but he did. And, you know, after one case of COVID, he declared, you know, state emergency. And I think we know that that's predominantly for all the funding that was coming from the federal government. And so, you know, I was very unhappy about that. I called down there multiple times and I said, hey, look, we're 20,000 square miles bigger, 300,000 people fewer than next door, which is South Dakota, and they're open for business. You know, we got the cleanest air in the nation with the way the jet stream comes across here. And being an aviator in the Marine Corps and still being an aviator now, you do a lot of, you know, with weather. So I was very disappointed with that, very mad, actually. And then the last trigger, quite frankly, was the 2020 election, because I think the you know, Trump not sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania anymore, we do not have anybody at the federal level that's actually protecting our freedom. And we've already seen our governor put our freedom on the table. And so I thought, okay, this is it. You know, I've got to do something. And I've been talking about it for a while. I mean, that was really the last straw when it comes down to it.
Okay. So my next question is, Wyoming citizens are facing just a litany of challenges. And, I mean, you could probably fill up this whole notebook full of them. In your opinion, what's the number one challenge facing Wyoming citizens?
Well, you know, these times, I think, are different than anything I've seen in my adult life. I've been following current events, both in the state, nationally, and internationally, since I was a kid, just because my parents were so well informed. You know, I think what's going on now in Wyoming, I mean, we've got this, and this is just over the last 15 months, you know, we've got this massive inflation that's hitting right now. And this is all due to the Biden administration and the Biden Republicans running the state that have bought into this qualitative easing. And of course, the more money you supply into the system, the less buying power you have with it. And, you know, Wyoming is, I think Sheridan County is actually at about 10.4%. You know, the national average is about 7.3. And that's the highest in the state is Sheridan County. So it's not going to get any better anytime soon. And I think it's really starting to hit the folks right now. Now this is naturally a monetary issue. I mean, there's all sorts of moral issues going on in the state, but, you know, that I've noticed, but in fact, what I do, Dave, and this is a very nondescript survey. In any meeting I've done, any town hall I've done around the state, and we've been around quite a bit here, is I pass out a survey. And it's nondescript. It's got all I want's the top three, right? So I give them 10 to spawn their thought, and then three blank lines at the bottom. And of course, a lot of these folks, which is great, they check every single one of them. But I said, look, guys, I really need to know what your top issues are, because I know regionally around the state, things are applicable to different folks, and you know they see things different. And but I do think when it comes down, you know, folks are very concerned. What I've seen, okay, and this is after kind of directly doing this with folks over Graham. I'm getting predominantly is Second Amendment preservation is a huge issue. I'm getting protection of women's sports, right? We had a bill, you know, and this is how this when I look at what I believe how out of touch the current administration is with the people of the state of Wyoming, is, you know, there was a bill, as you know, that was presented to protect women's sports, along with voter integrity. And I hear voter integrity a lot out on the road, because it's one thing for every vote to count, like you always hear the liberals say, every vote's got to count. Well, it's a whole other thing for that vote to count for the intended recipient. And that's really what we're looking for. And, you know, a lot of these folks, or some folks, just don't vote anymore. They don't trust the system. And so I would say, you know, those top three, not necessarily in that order, but top three or four. And the thing is those bills, you know, particularly for the crossover, which Bo Bightman, you know, introduced, and the protection of women's sports, those are something that the governor could have said, hey, debate them, pull them out of the desk and debate them. Get those things out here. And I know some were partially debated. Whether it gets to his desk or not is a different story, but debate them. Put these things through a no-kidding debate because that's what the people want. And that didn't happen, or at least in all, you know. And so those are the primary things that I'm seeing around the state so far. And I think it's very much in alignment with where I want to take the state. And but, you know, we really have to regain the people's trust in our state government.
No kidding there. It's gone awry. So let's pick out one of those. I mean, you mentioned some policy issues that Wyoming citizens are worried about, and you also mentioned some social issues.
Right.
So let's just take the first one that you mentioned, inflation.
Okay.
Probably the number two biggest industry in our state is agriculture. You know, obviously natural resources is number one, but agriculture certainly is number two. And there's no group that inflation hits harder than your ranchers and your farmers. You know, the price of fertilizer is up, the price of feed is up, you know, the price of fuel. You know, if you have to truck in cake for your cows, well, then you're paying a premium on
That's
it.
Right.
So as governor, what could you do to alleviate the impact that inflation has on Wyoming citizens?
Well, so what I've got, my goal, let me just first state my goal for the state, is my goal is to make Wyoming the freest state in the nation. Okay, so underneath there, I've got protect personal freedoms, pursue government accountability, and then promote state sovereignty. So under my promote state sovereignty, I have what's called insulationism, an insulation plan, right? Now, insulationism is not in our lexicon, but I tell you, the folks put me down in Cheyenne, and it will be. We'll get it put in Webster's and everything else. But what insulationism is just protecting Wyoming from bad federal policy. And really what that has to do with, it has to do a lot with pushing back, completely pushing back. There's nothing about the Biden 30-30 land and water grab that I agree with at all. This whole thing with carbon sequestration, you know, the CCUS, carbon capture utilization system or whatever it is. And I'm getting to your point here, but I think that when I look at all the bad federal policy is, you know, we used to be far more self-reliant than we are right now. Well, I want to see at least five, if not more, commercial packing plants in this state. Whether it comes by, you know, whether we have a separate independent type of broker so these ranchers don't have to go to Monford, or at least it gives them a choice, right? So if, you know, depending upon what they're selling right now, buying and selling beef, by the time they sell, particularly in today's market, they never are repaid for the cost that actually goes into raising these animals. So, but then I go down to Albertsons and I'm sitting there paying $7 or $8 a pound for ground beef. And I'm thinking, what the heck is going on here? So I got to believe that if we can get our government out of the way, right, get rid of a lot of this, you know, a lot of these foolish regulations and say, okay, guys, let's try to spawn this and become more self-reliant. Agriculture is just one of the many that that I do think that all the overhead that's in there right now for, you know, just a pound of ground beef could be reduced big time. And the consumer could both benefit from that and the ranchers can benefit from that. There's no reason why we can't. I also look at the cost of gas, cost of fuel, whether it's diesel or regular gasoline. And, you know, they're not going to be running electric tractors out there. I mean, there's, you know, and I got to believe that there's a way right now with a single refinery, I think, that we have in this state that, you know, we could say, okay, guys, as governor, you know, and I'm not sure exactly how this would work, but I got to believe there's a way that we could say, okay, you produce, you sell in Wyoming. We're going to cut severance. We're going to look at all ways to cut the cost for a gallon of gas to where it actually makes it more profitable for them. Because, I mean, it's getting so expensive right now. You know, it $4 for a regular and $5+ for diesel. It gets to a point where it's just untenable for these agricultural people. And then the other thing is now just a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, you know, Biden just allowed conservation groups to bid on BLM leases. So what that's going to do now is now you're going to have these deep pocket conservation groups competing for the same land that these ranchers have. So, In all likelihood, most of them, the average middle class rancher likely won't be able to compete with these big deep pocket conservation groups. And as soon as that land's taken out, it's out for perpetuity. And this is all part of, I know it's all part of the 30-30 scheme. So again, I would say no to that without a doubt. I would do everything I could to get to reduce the regs to where we can spawn internal growth, get government out of the way.
Let's take a quick break and pay some bills. We'll wrap up our interview with Brent Behan in just a second, but first, a completely obscene profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a barn or a roping arena or a warehouse or any type of metal structure that you could possibly come up with, well, then you need to call my friends Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings, 307-674-2532. These guys are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they certainly do it better than anyone else. So give them a call, 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. Don't forget about the Cowboy State Politics Facebook page. Like it, share it, follow it, and tell everybody you know about it. Of course, I'll post all of the episodes there, but also anything I find during the course of the week that I think you might be interested in. You can also hit me up on Twitter. My handle is David Dom Iverson. And of course, you can also get a hold of me straight from the website. And if you haven't gotten tickets to the Trump rally that's going to be held May 28th in Casper, you need to do that. I put a link to their ticket site on the show content tab at the website. Trust me, there's going to be a little surprise at that rally that I know that you're absolutely going to love. So make sure you get tickets, and I'll see you in Casper on the 28th. And now, back to the program. U.S. troops in Ukraine?
No.
Why?
No. It's not in our best national interest. I can tell you, we would get so bogged down over there. And it's just not. I mean, it's an unnecessary loss of life. I think that, we're dealing with a scrapper, with Putin. But I think that the bigger picture here is that Xi, who's the self-declared lifelong president of China as of a few years ago, he's the ultimate puppet master throughout the world. Nothing is going to happen in Russia that Xi doesn't have some sort of knowledge about, right? I can tell you, we have to be prepared for anything, but I do believe thoroughly that the next big potential international thing is going to come in the Western Pacific. And so I think being bogged down over there when it does not serve our best interest, and I saw the same thing with Iraq, right? It really didn't. You know, and then we saw this disastrous pullout of Afghanistan, and it comes down to why were we over there? In the first place, if that's the way we left it, and see, we haven't won a war since 1945. Now we've won plenty of battles since then. I mean, we've had some unbelievable bravery in battles in Korea, Vietnam, and even up to Iraq and Afghanistan. But I mean, really, no kidding, winning was in 1945, and unfortunately. I am not a fan of the senior, and I'm talking senior leadership in the Pentagon right now, because they don't know how to win, right? And particularly with our Secretary of Defense and Lloyd Austin, and then with the Commander-in-Chief, whether that's, we're kind of living through Barack Obama's third term right now. I don't have any confidence at all that our leadership is poised to win anything like that. And, to what end? What's the end state? That's the one thing we fail to do, is what is the end state? Where do we want, what's the desired outcome here? And that has to be defined before we do anything. This acting upon emotion, I think it's horrible what's gone on in Ukraine with what the Russians have done to these folks. I mean, it's just horrible. And we haven't seen that stuff in Europe anyway, because a lot of that stuff's going on in Africa and some of these other places around the world. But we haven't seen that kind of those kind of atrocities in Europe since you know, the rise of the Third Reich, right? And World War II and just horrible stuff. And but, you know, it comes down to cooler heads prevailing saying, okay, what do we have to gain? Is this in the best interest of the United States? And what is the end state if we actually do commit troops to the ground? Because once you do, there's no going back, you know. And, of course, it has the propensity to escalate very quickly.
Do we need more taxes?
No.
Why not?
No. You're talking statewide or?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely not. Okay, so budget-wise, what I want to see in this state, and one of the things I would do right away, is I want to do a full top-down, wall-to-wall budgetary and staffing audit of the state. And I also want to do a redundancy analysis, right? It seems like every time the legislature meets, they create a new group of some government employees. So I look at this and I think,
no, okay, you're not suggesting the government creates government, are you?
Well, and you mentioned earlier, you know, as I was looking at our GDP, roughly about $40 billion, and you're right, the natural resources, minerals are on at top at roughly about 8 point whatever billion. Well, the next one is government.
Yeah.
Is about $5 billion of that. And I'm thinking, what is going on? So one in four of the employed population in this state is a public employee. Now, I have no issues with public employees, but it's like in a state of 580,000 people, do we need that many public employees? And but as I look at this, I'm thinking, okay, we've created this giant machine, right? I mean, it's just like DC, you know, it's just like the federal government. And so no, I don't. Now, and I do want to go back because as I look at this, and I look at a roughly $3 billion a year to run this state, I'm thinking, I don't think we have any idea what it really takes to run this state. I mean, to no kid run it. So I want to look at all the departments, figure out what's essential and what's not. Take the essential ones, figure out all their tasking. What are the essential tasks and what aren't? And with the essential tasks, let's match FTEs, full-time employees, because that's where the money goes. And I bet you we'd find out real quick that it doesn't take nearly what we put in there. That's purely supposition.
I interviewed a guy named Mike Lehman last year, and he's the legislative liaison for the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And he said that Wyoming is the biggest socialist state, the biggest socialist conservative state in the union. Yeah. So my next question is, the biggest line item on our budget is education.
That's right.
It goes, like, the education budget goes up about $200 million every single year. Automatically. We don't even have to add anything to it. And they're called escalators, but they just jack up the price of education. So as governor, what's the number one thing you can do to get a handle on our government spending as it relates to education?
Well, I tell you, I believe in cost-based budgeting, and I believe in performance-based budgeting. So I want to get this back to where, okay, you guys justify your costs. So I did an analysis of biennium 1999 and 2000. And I compared that to biennium 2019 and 2020. Purely
scary,
education.
Isn't it?
Purely education, right? So in that time, that 20-year period, we gained roughly 83,000 people in the state. Well, UW only added like 420 plus or minus enrollees, new enrollees. K through 12 lost like 1,300 and some odd students. Now, going back to UW, for every new student that they enrolled, they added an educator. For every two, they added an educator. For K through 12, for every 2.7 students they lost, they added an educator. I'm thinking, wait a minute. And of course, we just built these new schools down to Casper and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking, what are we doing? And there's no check. There's no, you know, and that's one thing. I would like to see what originally was our state examiner, actually become the state examiner again and make sure that individual has all those authorities. Because there's a reason why it's by itself, and that's to avoid any conflict of interests, you know, objective analysis. But until folks are held accountable for this, I remember being young, you know, you had a principal, maybe an assistant principal, and that was it. Well, now you have, you know, this whole layer of administrators in there.
I mean, there's a school in Gillette, a high school, that has four principals.
I mean, for what purpose? You know, and you know, why does Sheridan County, of all places, have three superintendents?
You know, that's a big job, apparently, yeah, right?
Well, and you know, and I'm not going after superintendents, but I'm thinking, okay, you know, I've commanded guys in and out of combat, a whole bunch of them. And I'm thinking, I've been responsible for all these guys. And far more than what these
these guys are responsible for. And, you know, if you're going to get paid that kind of money, which they get paid with all the benefits associated with it, then there's a level of responsibility that you should have, you know. So, you know, I think, you know, I look at the teacher mix per teacher to student ratio mix, and I'm thinking, okay, well, but then I start looking at the administrator per teacher. Well, no wonder, you know. Okay, teachers, okay. But let's look at that. I mean, when it comes down to administrators throughout our school system, it is just unreal. So I still, getting back to that analysis, our biennium back in, 20 years ago, 1999 to 2000, was for education. And we know that those funds are federal and general fund, you know, the command of there, was roughly $3.3 billion. Well, just in 2019 and 2020, it was like $8.9 billion. So if you take CPI, which Consumer Price Index, the buying power of a dollar, just over those 20 years, well, and really no growth in education, right, that it should have been roughly about $5.4 billion. So it's like, where in the world did $4 billion go? The extra four, you know, the difference between $5.4 and $8.9 billion. It's like, where did that money go? And so that needs a thorough analysis of it, and I think there has to be a lot of folks coming to account on why this is the way it is, particularly one of my biggest concerns with wanting to do this redundancy analysis and full wall-to-wall audit is, as I project that and healthcare combined, I mean, over the next 5 or 6 years, we're potentially going to be insolvent unless we incorporate a state income tax, which I will not do on my watch period. And if it comes up before me, there's absolutely no way we're doing it.
Okay, so let's do a quick sort of lightning round type of thing. Okay. I'm just going to answer quick question. I want you to answer really fast.
Okay.
So, you know, yes or no, whatever you want to say. So Medicaid expansion.
No.
Legalized pot.
No.
Country of origin labeling.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I want to know where the beef's coming from. You're darn right.
Is that something we could do, like, internally?
Absolutely. If we do our own and market that as 307 beef or whatever, man, that stuff would sell like crazy. Canadian, Argentinian, Brazilian beef, man, if I want Wyoming beef on my table, other than going to like a private butcher, I want it on my table. It's the best beef. It's the best beef out there, hands down.
Well, Brent, I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me on Cowboy State Politics. So I know you've been to a lot of different counties. Where are you headed next?
This coming Saturday, we're heading to Sundance for their Lincoln Day dinner. And then the very next day, we're heading to Evanston and working the I-80 corridor. Evanston over to Rock Springs, Rollins, Saratoga. And then we'll probably head up from there, Pavilion maybe, and then kind of over by Lander. And then Matisse, Cody, and then over to Graybull for their Lincoln Day dinner. And then we'll come back here to Sheridan. So we'll be on the road for a few days.
So if folks want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
They could go to brentbn.com, and I am working to update that to put a schedule on it. It's kind of a skeleton website right now. They can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and what's the other one? It's
Twitter?
No, not Facebook. Unless Elon Musk buys it.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them, like Getter.
Getter. And get her, yeah. And that's what they can do.
Okay, well, Brent, I appreciate your time, and good luck.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. Oh, jeez. I forget. We just put Getter on there.
There's so many of them that it's...
That wraps up our gubernatorial forum. Listen to each one of the interviews, and you can really hear the differences in how each candidate answers the questions. Of course, we're going to talk to all of the candidates probably several times throughout the campaign, and I'll keep you posted whenever something comes up. Tomorrow, we're going to have an interview with Nina Weber. She was at the Laramie County Republican Convention, and she's going to confirm that, yeah, they violated a bunch of their bylaws. Have a good day, and we'll talk again tomorrow. From the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.